Hello and welcome to The Inner Gamer, episode 235. We are the video game source for you, the casual gamer. My name is Brett Yanosky.
And I'm Austin Rouse. And this week on The Inner Gamer Podcast, Brett plays Control on PS4. Very nice. Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Oh, yeah.
And he's digging it. So we're going to talk about that. I have a game, but I'll get to that in a second. In the gaming news, Cyberpunk 2077 has new gameplay, and we dive into all that's been shown. Also, Steam is unrealistic for developers, says Ubisoft executive. So Steam is back in the news again, along with Epic, and Ubisoft seems to throw itself into the ring for some reason. And there's a lot of that.
Word.
And then Amazon may have leaked Overwatch for the Switch. What? What? Are you going to play on the Switch? Because I'm not. And the discussion topic, we dive in to a game that I've probably put in about 20 hours at this point.
Oh,
WoW Classic. It is out. It's released. It is gigantic. It has changed the way we look at gaming again.
It's huge.
And we're going to dive into all the great details that have come out over the past week, my experiences, and what this means for the future of video games and why it's going to change the world of Warcraft again. So here we go.
It's Chris Parson here. I'm the voice of Junkrat, and you are listening to The Inner Gamer.
Just remember, it's a perfect day for some mayhem.
It is September 3rd, 2019. Welcome to The Inner Gamer Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, we love for you to donate to make the show better. And we'll give you some goodies along the way. For as little as $5, you can head over to our website, theinnergamer.net. Click that donate button to contribute either monthly via Patreon, which we love, love, love for you to provide any support you can. And we'll give you some awesome goodies along the way. So we can keep bringing you the highest quality content each and every week. You know, we're trying to reform our events a little bit, do some different things to provide some more value to our local folks, and then do a lot more activity within our Discord channel and stuff. So you will get some value out of it. You can be marked a tick friend, or in this case, a Patreon subscriber, if you come into our Discord channel and pay us a little bit of money just to help support the show. So we'd love for you to do that so we can keep growing and get bigger and better as time goes on. Also, if you're in the DFW area, check out our next event this Saturday. We will be at Ampersand in Fort Worth. This is in the West 7th area of Fort Worth, Texas. And we'll be there doing a Super Smash Brothers tournament and party. So we have it as plus party because you don't have to come and play in the tournament if you don't want to. We are doing a Super Smash Brothers 64-player single elimination tournament, which will be $10 to buy in. The sign-up is available now on Facebook and on meetup.com. So if you go on there, click on the link to register, and it takes you to challenge. You just have to create an account, put in your $10 payment, and you are registered to go. And if you need any special seating, if you got some friends that are going to be there with you, let us know ahead of time, and we will adjust that accordingly so you're not like playing your friend at the very beginning and like getting knocked out super early. So that is something that we can contribute to and help with. Anyway, so come on out this Saturday. It's like, wait a minute, now I lost my train of thought there. This Saturday to play, we'll start at 4 o'clock. The tournament will start at 4:30, but if you show up at 4, that's even better and awesome. And yeah, come on out. We'll hope to see you there. And let's jump into some games.
Yes.
You ready?
Yeah.
You ready?
Brett, I have an amazing game to talk about, but I'm gonna save it till the discussion topic because
yes,
there's so much to talk about with World of Warcraft Classic that it can't fit in the game segment.
Yeah, so Fuck that game. I hate it. No, I'm just kidding. It's cool. But yeah, we're going to talk about World of Warcraft Classic, all in our discussion topics. Austin's going to give all of his lovely thoughts about that game. But first, we got another game we need to talk about. Remedy Entertainment's latest game called Control. Now, this is not a complete full review because I haven't played a shit ton of it yet, but I put about 3-ish hours into it, and I want to leave to give my first impressions, and then next week I'll probably come back with like everything once I've dove pretty heavily into it. But I have a lot to talk about just to get the gist of it out there. So those of you that don't know Remedy Entertainment, they have made games such as the original Max Payne. They made Alan Wake, which is one of my favorite games of all time. They produced Quantum Break. And what else do they do? I think they have one other game out there that they did at one point or another. Yeah, there's probably something else. But anyway, The latest game is called Control. And in Control, you play a female protagonist who just shows up at the Federal Bureau of Control. And you don't know why she's there yet, but you quickly find out. What is
the Federal Bureau of Control?
So the Federal Bureau of Control, it's not clearly stated, but okay. Their basic intentionality is to deal with things of, I would say, like paranormal-ish stuff. So they are a division of the government that is there to identify and control weird shit that happens around the country and fix it. Okay. So yeah.
So it might be.
Do what?
It might be.
Exactly. Yeah. But they don't explicitly state all that, but you learn as time goes on by collecting letters and things that are lying around, you learn some of the back history of the Federal Bureau of Control. And the reason your character is there is because something happened to your brother. And you're here to find answers. But when you get there, nobody's there. And it's kind of weird. So you're trying to figure stuff out. And very quickly, you get assigned. And there's no spoilers here because this all happens in the first like 20 minutes of the game. But you are assigned director of the Bureau of Control because the previous director, something happened. And you are now the director. And you're like, I don't know how this really happened, but I need answers. So let's go with it. And then you jump into the game. So it's the enemy that you're playing. So the whole entire game takes place in this building called the Old House. And the Old House, one of the people of that is still not possessed in the Federal Bureau of Control, says that the Old House is a place that you can find. It's in New York City. And you can find it if you're actively looking for it. Otherwise, you're not going to see it. So it's kind of like this nondescript building that just exists if you are told to go there or you are meant to go there. Otherwise, it just falls in the midst of everything else and nobody really knows that there is a Federal Bureau of Control in this city. So it's very strange. And so you're in the Old House, and the Old House is a living thing. And I haven't figured out why it does this, but like parts of the room will like move, like pieces will come out of the walls and adjust, move around and do different things. And it's like a living organism, except it's a house, and it's very, very strange. And the whole entire game is just very, very strange because there's this, you're kind of communicating with somebody this entire time in your head. And I don't know if she's communicating with the player as if like we're in her head, or you're communicating with her brother, or what you're doing. But there's this constant, like, she's hiding from the people she's speaking with that there's somebody else there. And she communicates to you, the player, as she goes through this to narrate kind of like her inner thoughts. And it's really, really trippy. And then there's moments where you like whenever you acquire, they have these things called OPs, and they're objects, or they're OOPs, they're objects of power. And these objects of power are possessed by the whole entire enemy that you're facing is called the Hiss. And this was something that you named as the director. And they were just like, oh, well, that's as good as anything. Let's just name them the Hiss because we don't know what the hell they are. But they're it's this like possessive force that has taken over the bodies of the employees of the control place. And you find documents that showcase that they may have expected this coming, but didn't know that it was coming, or not everybody knew it was coming, but it seems like some of the higher ups may have known and kind of prepared ahead of time, because some people that are still there have these devices that prevents them from getting infected by the Hiss, but everybody else is infected. So some of them, like their bodies like float up in the air, like, and just levitate and just sit there. So they're possessed, but they don't interact. And then others are attacking you and trying to kill you, or anybody really that is there that's not possessed. And you're going around to shoot these guys. So you have this thing, this weapon that's called the service weapon that you pick up super early in the game. And that's your weapon for the entirety of the game. It's a pistol. And you upgrade the pistol as time goes on. So you get new mods by collecting crafting materials as you kill enemies or finding these boxes thrown around the map. And that helps you to upgrade your weapon to do more stuff and get more power and all these things. And then you also have your telekinetic powers, which I still haven't figured out why I somehow have the ability to have telekinesis. But it's like fucking awesome to use telekinesis. Like, I only have one power right now, but it's called launch. So I can grab any object in the world and pull it towards me and just release. And it just sends it flying at whatever the enemy I've targeted. And it'll like create this crazy massive damage. And that can be upgraded. So you upgrade your energy, which you use energy to use the telekinesis. So right now I can do like two pulls and pushes before my energy bar goes out, and that's a refill. So your ammo and your telekinesis both have like refillable meters, and you never run out of ammo. It's just you have to wait for it to like reload again. So that's kind of cool, because you're not like scavenging for ammunition or anything like that. You're just scavenging for health and then upgraded materials as you're running around. And there's like an ability tree to like modify your abilities to upgrade your health and your energy and your melee attack and all that kind of stuff. So there's some depth to the, there's progression that takes place throughout the game, which helps you kind of keep going, because you can add mods to your gun. You can add mods to yourself. So I can get like 16% more energy refill speed or, you know, whatever, but you can only have a certain number of slots per item, or per person. As time goes on, you can also upgrade that. But gameplay wise, I mean, it's super cool. Like shooting mechanics, stuff like that. The enemies aren't super hard yet, but I did play a boss battle, and that was pretty challenging. Just getting used to how the fact that I needed to move a lot to avoid being assaulted and all that stuff. But I can see as they've unlocked, because there's different types of hiss that come at you, because they had different types of employees that had different functions at the Federal Bureau of Control that are now being used against you. So they had like a demolitions expert who was sent on site to locations to do demolitions. So now that they've been infected, well, now they're doing demolitions towards you. So you have to then fight back against these guys that have like explosive rockets and shit. And it's like, fuck, this is scary. But it's such a Remedy type game, and it's so moody and melodic, and just there's so many things that just don't make sense. It's kind of like a mix of, did you ever see Lost, the TV show?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a mix of Lost and Inception and Alan Wake, I would say.
Yeah, I see that.
It's kind of got a little combo of all that stuff, and it's just really, really odd and strange. And but the story is really gripping. Like, I don't know what's happening, but they're giving me just enough to keep me like, oh, now I understand why this is this way, or I get why this exists here, or, you know, like, you want to know why she's there, and that keeps me moving forward to learn more about this stuff, because they've presented it, and I don't know why I'm so interested in it, but I'm just intrigued by it. How did she show up here? And she's, something happened to her brother. You don't know what happened to her brother. And she's going through all of this. And then she somehow becomes a director real fast. I'm like, how the hell did that happen? How does she have these abilities? Like, what's her background? Who the hell is she talking to? Like, there's all these crazy things that are intertwining that just make for a really interesting just mystery, and trying to piece all the puzzles together. And anybody that's playing the game, I highly encourage you search a lot, because there's every room has like, there's a lot of places you can find reading material that gives you more insight into the world, and unlockables. So you can get like things that help you upgrade faster down the line, and a lot of stuff like that. But graphics are great. I mean, it looks super awesome. Play on PS4 Pro. It runs really well, moves fast. But yeah, I'm going to stop talking for a second, see if you have any questions. Okay. And then I'm going to go into some negatives.
Well, yeah, it's very different and unique.
Yeah.
And I mean, in a video game, that's either good or bad. And for me, it's like, I was kind of excited for it when I first heard about it. I know you were really pumped for it. And then you said, I became only kind of hyped about it because you were hyped about it.
Yeah.
And then you said you saw some gameplay and it didn't look that great, and so you're concerned. And I was like, yeah, I can see how, like, it doesn't seem like there's a lot going on here, at least from what we saw at E3's leading up to this, to the release. And I'm sure there's a story trailer out there, but I know the trailers that I saw were also very cryptic, and I don't know what's going on. there's nothing really relatable. Minus, hey, here's a crazy game. You can go and shoot and fly around and use psychic powers. It's like, that's awesome, but I have no reason to want to get connected to this character or find out what the story is. It's like, I feel like any of the marketing has not really been that great. Like, yeah. I don't know what this game's about, or who I'm following, who's the protagonist, and why I care to play it to get through the story. There's just no reason. So, like, watching you play it was interesting, but I can't say I want to go out and buy it right now. You know? Yeah.
Well, it's what's kind of nice about this game, and I was, so this is the kind of game that I feel like people should play just for the sake of keeping single player games alive, because this is a real well done badass single player game, story based game. And yeah, like I can't say that I relate to the character. I mean, I understand that. I mean, I don't have a sibling or anything like that, so I don't understand that. So it's like not really that I'm relating to her.
You have nothing to really grab onto.
I do, because I'm so intrigued by the mystery behind everything. So that's what I'm grabbing onto, is like this unknown. Like, why is this? Like, I just have so many questions that I want answered. So far, the questions that I have that have been answered satisfactorily. Where I'm like, okay, that's really cool. Like, I'm intrigued by that. But it's not like it's not a personal like. Driving home to me, like, I can relate to this situation that they're in.
I don't think it's that. For what you told me, it's very vague, so there's nothing to really grab on to that character. Like, you're just, who is she? What does she want? Obviously, she wants to do this, but there's no backstory to that to really connect with people, is what I'm trying to look for.
Yeah.
From what you told me, I haven't played it, so I don't know.
So what she wants, I mean, her brother. She's trying to find out why, because her brother died.
Right.
That's essentially what happened. So, and it happened a long time ago, and these guys did it. But she doesn't know why or how, and she needs answers. So that's what she's there for. So she's got a drive in that regard. And then her push for it, like, her as a character, she's a strong female protagonist. She definitely has that. She's this whole weird... her talking to herself and not quite knowing what's going on.
Is that set up very well?
Yes, it is. And it's at first you don't really get it. You just kind of assume that it's just her just narrating, but then you realize, no, she's actually talking to somebody in her head. And whether that's me or if that's her brother or whoever, I don't really know what it is, but it's compelling and it's interesting. But she's also talking to the director in her head as well, and she can like speak to him even though he's not all around anymore. So she has that ability as well, and it's like, why does she have that ability? Well, and then she can also, we thought maybe because she is not affected by the hiss, that maybe she can, you know, bring them back from being possessed. Because what she can do is she can enter into a room, and this is kind of a gameplay mechanic but also a story mechanic, where there's a room, after you take out all the enemies inside there, you can go and like do this weird thing where you just like hold your hands for a long time and like use this like energy that you have or whatever to like basically cleanse the room of the hiss infection. So then suddenly the room shifts and moves around and it goes back to normal, and then that becomes like a control point, which is a fast travel station and checkpoint. That's where you come back when you die, those kinds of things. So it's a gameplay mechanic, but it's also, she's cleansing places, parts of the room, to like dig deeper into finding the mystery of the oldest house, why this guy's not around anymore, what happened to her brother, all these stories, all these questions that you need answers to. And then, you know, it could be we get to the end of it and it's like, it's not very satisfactory, but it's got me gripped to where I'm like, I want to know more about this. And Lost did the same thing for me. Like, even though Lost didn't have a good ending, but it has the same kind of mystery that's going there, where they've set up enough pieces that I'm like, that's really cool. That's really weird. But I want to know more about it. And that's what is driving me forward. So, and they've done a good job with that. And Alan Wake was that way too. You know, it was kind of like, I didn't really relate to the guy, because he was like, well, I don't like writing anymore and I hate the world, so I'm just going to go out to the middle of nowhere and just like, you know, isolate myself. But what I liked about it was, I mean, I kind of appreciate that journey. Sense. Yeah.
I mean, you understand where he's coming from, what happened, and why he's here.
Yeah.
And then shit goes awry.
Yeah. And you get that from her too, a little bit. I mean, you understand why she's there pretty early. Like, because there's a little like preface of her kind of narrating as they start showcasing what this building looks like. They're narrating her journey to get here, and then her brother and how he was lost, and now she found. Has no answers about it. No, he's not found yet. So doesn't know what happened
to
him.
I'll sing him a song.
Oh yeah. But I think it's interesting, but it might not. I mean, I don't know if it's for everybody, but I think it's one of those games where, I mean, there's nothing in this game that, like, in a day where we're surrounded by like these microtransactions and games that have way too much content and way too much like this and that going on. This is a very focused, tight, well-developed story game. The gameplay is rock solid so far. The story is interesting. There's some side quests you can do, but not like a shit ton of side quests. There's ability upgrades and stuff, but it's not overly done. Like, everything is just enough to get you through it. And I like that. And it's a $60 game. There's no bells and whistles or added microtransactions or any bullshit. It's just
nice.
Here you go. There's a game. It's single player. It's cool. It's fun. And it progresses you through the story. And I don't think it's going to be super long, because I was looking at the mission list. There's like 9-10 missions, and I'm on mission 3. So I'm like a third of the way through. So yeah. I don't think it's going to be I think it's going to be like a 10-12 hour game. But I'm cool with that, because that's what I want.
Fine, yeah.
As long as it's like, you know, succinct.
Right.
And like wraps it up in a nice bow at the end. So we'll see what happens. But
very cool.
Yeah. There are, I mean, like the map, I've heard people complain about the map. The map's kind of concerning, because you get kind of disoriented. You don't really know where you're going, because when you pull up the map, you can't zoom in or zoom out or move around on the map. It's just a static map on your screen. And it shows you where you are, and it shows you where the different rooms are. But there's stairwells everywhere on the level that you're on. Even though you're on the first floor, technically, there's not a clear definition of, you're not sure if the location you need to go to is up or down the stairs based on the map layout. So I think I was talking to Jason, shout out to Jason. We were chatting about this because he's playing through Control right now as well. He was saying like a mini map would be good for this, just to kind of give you some indicator. Or I think even like, you know, like not the compass row at the top, but just like a little line and like a directional arrow. So as you turn your character around, it shows you like, okay, this is the direction of the waypoint. So you kind of have some directionality in where you're traveling to. And then there's some other additional features that they give you. Like, you get to unlock new abilities and stuff later on. They don't clearly explain how to do that. It's just kind of a little subtext that says, oh, hey, you can go do these things at the control point now, but you have to go to the control point and then find the menus to see, oh yeah, there's like unlockables that I can now upgrade and change out. So those are a few little minor things, but otherwise I think it's solid. I mean, I'm impressed by it. And everybody's been giving it like 8.5, 8.7, 9s. A lot of people have been saying it's the best Remedy game they've ever made. So
wow,
it's been getting good reviews. It just hasn't been, I think, because it came out the same week as WoW Classic, it got overshadowed by that.
I was going to say, I haven't heard anything about this game.
Yeah, it's just been completely overshadowed by all the things that have led up to it. And they never had a big marketing push, because they don't have a big publisher behind them. It's 505 Games publishing it. They're not being published by Xbox or anything like that. So it's very, it got low-key marketing budget and stuff like that. But I highly recommend people play it, because this is the kind of game that we want to survive, because it's a single-player game that we met. Like, it's the days of old. Like, I feel like this is a game that, had it come out 2 years ago, would have been like the best damn game in the world. And I still think it's like a badass game today, but it kind of feels like something that came out back then before they put a bunch of bullshit into games. So it's cool. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I might give it a go once you beat it.
There you go. Should.
We'll see.
Oh, yeah. See. Do it. Do it. I mean, you might want to wait until it comes, it like drops in price or something, like $40.
I was going to borrow your game.
Or you can do that too. Yeah. I'll charge you a $5 a day rental fee.
Okay. How about just $5 call a day?
Sound what it we'll figure it out. I'll probably let you borrow it.
Money.
All right, cool. So that's it. Sound good?
Yeah, all sounds good.
All right, well, that's gonna wrap it up for the games we played this week. If you want to play games with us each and every week, you can join us on our Discord channel, which is now the Inner Gamer WoW Classic channel, apparently, which we'll talk more about later on the discussion.
Everybody's
playing WoW Classic. It's scary. it's just so scary. So check out the link in the show notes if you want to join us. If you like what you hear, subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app and tell a friend. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with our video game news.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
It is time for our gaming news. In this segment, we share the best headlines from the week in the gaming industry. And first up, we have Cyberpunk 2077. As promised, they released the gameplay demo that they showed off to everybody at E3. However, I feel like it's probably a little bit of a more condensed version than it was at E3. But nonetheless, we have new gameplay footage from Cyberpunk 2077. And with it, some new information about gameplay that we have discovered. So I'm pulling this from a reference at GameSpot.com. But in it, we saw a good amount of new features in regards to player choice in the game, carrying out some side quests, got to hear more of the voices of the characters, which is pretty cool. See some more of the graphics, some of the driving mechanics, and then a new area called Pacifica that I thought was really interesting that was meant to be this new area where they bring people in, and it was very high end, ritzy, fancy, and then shit hit the fan, and then now it's like half done, and then this gang moved in called the Something Boys or whatever, that's like this Jamaican group, and they've taken over the whole region, and they seem like they're a little scary and interesting and dangerous, but it looks pretty. I mean, I'm still excited about it. Like, it looks really good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's got some more gamey sounding stuff to it than, like, you're starting to see it more as a game and less of like, oh my gosh, it's the biggest masterpiece non-game related content thing ever. Now it feels like it's more actually a game and it's real.
Yeah.
And that's probably a good thing in a way. But, So they showed off some of the customization and stuff like that. But there's a couple of things that I specifically want to highlight, such as the paths, because you can decide at the beginning a life path of your character. So like what kind of person you're going to be. And this is going to tie into your story things that you can say down the line. So it's kind of like when you're playing Mass Effect and you could decide if you want to be, what was it, like Renegade or something else or whatever, like good or bad. You could make those choices early that affected your dialogue later on or gave you new dialogue options.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be kind of the same way, but you have more of them to choose from. So they're going to have that in place, which sounds pretty interesting. I saw like they had a differentiation of you can be like a brawler kind of character that gets up close and personal and like takes people down and melee fight and lots of gun combat and stuff like that, or you can be more of the hacker type that does a lot of like almost like Watch Dogs-y hacking mechanics to carry out your combat maneuvers, or non-combative entirely if you want to, and go that route instead. So depending on the type of player you want to be, you have those options in there. And that's like the Netrunner character, I think is what they called it. So it allows you to like hack into things to do different types of things, which is pretty cool.
What I'm doing more of.
You think so?
Yeah. They say you can run in guns blazing or you can go in stealthy. And I was like, I feel like stealthy is the way to go though.
Sounds like you, man. Yeah. Like Ranger style, you know?
Well, no, I mean, I like my fair share of just going in guns blazing, but I mean, you have all this technology and you got to use it. Like that's the world you live in. I feel like that is what you should do, especially as a character. You know, you go in guns blazing when all else is lost. I feel like that's just me.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get into the mindset of the world that we're going to be in. Anyway.
Yeah.
Continue, please.
They also mentioned, this was not mentioned in the video, but it's kind of brought about a little bit. They actually had city planners hired to work on Cyberpunk to help them build out the city to make it more believable and real, which I thought was pretty interesting.
That is very awesome.
And I guess in The Witcher 3, you play The Witcher 3, I didn't play it, but apparently to get quests in that game, you got extra side quest missions from like boards and then NPCs kind of randomly throughout the game. And this one, apparently there's designated quest givers called Fixers that you find throughout the world that you go to get extra missions. So I think it's more intentional. It's not like you just discover them. It's like, I need to do missions. You go find these people that need jobs done.
Right.
And then they'll give you these quests to carry out further. Yeah, they showed one thing that I thought was interesting in the video is they showcased the leveling, the ability tree system and how you upgrade your character. And, you know, it's not like you pick your life path, but it sounds like once you get past that point and you add abilities and stuff like that, you can really kind of fashion your own type of character to be you in any direction. So the way the tree is set up, I mean, it just branches out in all different pathways. And it's not like you just follow like this line or this line or this line. It's just, you just go anywhere you want to and create the character that is uniquely yours, which I would like to see more about that and what that looks like down the line, but it looked kind of interesting. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun. There was, I mean, the game looks awesome. The cars look super sick. Vehicles and stuff like that. The different gangs of Voodoo Boys, that was the name of them. The Voodoo Boys and the animals. Seeing some of that kind of dichotomy inside the game is cool, where you can like decide if you want to become friends or enemies with different groups that can then adversely affect other relationships throughout the game.
Right.
So, They're doing a lot of stuff with it. And to add to that, I was found another article on Polygon that mentioned that CD Projekt Red is officially making more Witcher and Cyberpunk games in the future. So this is kind of in a broader spectrum of them as a company. They are doing this new push where after they finish Cyberpunk 2077, they're moving to what's called a dual franchise model. And that means that there's more games coming from both. So in the future, CDPR is going to be basically a studio that's going to pump out these two franchises back and forth. So they'll have The Witcher, they'll have Cyberpunk, and then several independent teams that are going to be doing some other projects. But this goal is going to allow the company to conduct parallel work on several projects and smooth out their long-term release schedule. So this means that it permits them to optimize manufacturing and financial activities, mitigate important risk factors, and make it easier for the company employees to seek professional fulfillment. So basically, by working on two of these franchises together, they'll be able to limit the peaks and valleys in their balance sheets and maintain a larger and more capable workforce of game developers. So while one game is kind of like, I think they're kind of following the GTA model, where they're doing like GTA and then Red Dead back and forth is what they've done recently. Well, not sort of, kind of doing that where they switch between two franchises and the one stays alive, they support that one while they're working on the other one,
right,
and putting
right.
that one out. So we're going to see more of both games, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, Cyberpunk, April 16th, 2020. It's around the corner.
Heck yeah.
Any additional thoughts, Austin?
No, I mean, I can't get any more hype than I already am. So seeing all this, it really doesn't do anything for me, honestly. I just want to play it. Like, let's just do this.
Yeah, just give it to me
I'm
now.
Done with the marketing, okay?
I know, it is kind of interesting. Like, we were like, I want to see more and more of this game. Like, I'm so excited. Like, they haven't told us anything or said anything. And now that we have a release date and stuff, it's just like, okay, just get over with. Let's just get to the game. Let's drop it. I kind of wish they had waited a little bit and given it more like a four-month like marketing cycle as opposed to what was, well, a year, I guess, year and a half now. I mean, because they announced that first trailer last year, and then it's been a year, and then now we have another 6 months until the game comes out. So,
I think I've gotten to the point as an older adult that as soon as I know I'm hyped for a game, like, I really don't care to see anything else now. Like, I know I want it. I know I want to play it. They've given you enough information. Like, that first trailer gave you way more than enough information to get you pumped for it.
Oh, like the 45-minute demo or whatever?
Yeah. And I was like, okay, that's all I need to see.
Yeah.
They explained everything. They showed enough. I'm ready to play.
Yep.
So
bring it out.
Yeah.
Bring it out. But you did get to see more of Johnny Silverhand in this one, which is kind of cool.
Yes. So
Got to see his involvement a little bit more. Mm-hmm. He seems pretty badass. Excited.
I mean, I saw enough of him. I'm ready. Damn it.
I know.
Give me the game.
Give it to me now. All right, so next article. IGN released a story last week from Ubisoft. They came out and said, or Ubisoft executive specifically, he came out, Chris Early is his name. That's an interesting name, Chris Early. What an interesting name. But he came out and said that Steam's business model is impractical in 2019. So, again, you know, we got Epic Game Store. They got their business model, 8812. Steam's model is, what was it, 70-30, I think is what it, no, it's 80-20, I believe is how it distributes. So, Steam's business model, 80, the distribution.
70-30.
It might be 70-30. I thought that was Steam. Oh, wait, here we go. No, yeah. You're right. Where Steam keeps 30% of a game sale price. Yes. Yeah. So, that is actually bigger than I thought it was. That's pretty high. I was thinking it was a 80-20 because I know that Apple is 70-30, I'm pretty sure. Which I think is also pretty high. But
Epic's 88-12.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So basically he says that it doesn't reflect where the world is today in terms of game distribution. So they said that their decision to not sell the Division 2 on Valve's platform was made as part of a larger business discussion at Ubisoft in regards to releasing their games on Steam.
Because they're going Epic exclusive.
Well, no, you can also get on Uplay.
I know.
You got it available there. But, yeah, so I mean, there's not much more to say about the story other than they went in to just explain that process. And, I mean, you know, Epic is, again, we've talked about this, beat this with a dead horse and stuff like that. But I don't disagree with their stance on this. I feel like, especially now with all the competition that exists out there and how much money Steam is definitely making, I mean, 30% revenue from every single game that sells through that. And then the other, like the people that make it are only getting, I mean, getting 70% of it. Like they're making plenty of money off of this, the distribution. And yes, they're providing a lot of services and features for them. But I think if you dropped it to 20%, like that would give a whole lot more money back to the developer and then still Steam would have no problem making a shit ton of cash. And then make them a little bit more, you know, competitive in the marketplace. Because that, I mean, that's probably why, I mean, Epic Games Store didn't help with strong arming people, but that's probably a lot of why Origin made their own store. I mean, Steam could be the reason why, I mean, just playing devil's advocate, Steam could be the reason we have so many game launchers out there now, because they charge so much that companies were trying to figure out how to reduce those margins. Now, granted, the argument could also be made that had they dropped it down to, say, 90-10, that these companies would still do it because they're still losing profit to Steam. So that argument can be made. But I'm curious to know if, you know, Steam 5 years ago had said, oh, we're going to change it to 85-15. You know, that's going to be the new distribution plan. Would Origin and Uplay and Bethesda Launcher and all these things exist now? Like they do or not. It's interesting theory. Think about.
Yeah. I mean, they're just such a giant titan right now. It's kind of hard to topple them, but obviously Epic says it's trying to do that, but it's a little hypocritical. And on that front, if you want to find out why you don't know, make sure to listen to our last podcast. We cover a lot of Epic stuff and, last podcast.
Yeah.
Or the podcast before that. Basically, like the past 20
last
podcasts,
like 10 podcasts
is covering Epic and why we don't like them and why they're a little hypocritical. But I don't know, if you want to change stuff, you definitely. I mean, I think Epic's mind, or at least their, not their approach, but what they're trying to do is honorable. But I think there's a better way of doing it, obviously.
Oh no, I totally agree. Yeah, their ideology is in the right place, but the way in which you're going about it is totally wrong.
Pretty messed up.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
So $100,000, if you sell $100,000 worth of stuff, Steam keeps $30,000 of that for just providing a storefront. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. That's a lot, so much money.
Yeah. But not going to change anytime soon. Somebody's got to shake it up, and Epic's not doing a really good job of shaking it up. I'm sure they're making money off of it, but yeah. Still, like, where are you going to go to get all your games? You're going to go Steam.
Well, I'm curious to know if anybody, once God Galaxy comes out, how that's going to affect things. So I don't know what their distribution model is.
You could easily do a pretty good push to try to keep people there and buy from their store. I mean, apparently they already have free games, I believe, and they do discounts as well. So, you know, I'm sure if they made it easier to buy stuff from their store than it would be to, like, go, you know, source them out to buy a game. I mean, I don't know how that's going to work out. They probably won't do that. But they might have, like, hey, buy a game here. And that might help spur them to kind of break into that market. We'll see. Anyway.
Yep. Alrighty then. So, next story on the docket today. I lost my thought process here. Yeah. Hang on a minute. I got it. All right, here we go.
Uh-oh.
Have you seen this, Austin? Telltale Games is back.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, I can believe that.
Really? Yeah, this was a shock to me.
What? They mentioned this like last year or something.
No, this is brand new. This just came out last week.
Yeah, someone bought them and then they're going to finish out the season for The Walking Dead.
No, that's not. That was just The Walking Dead. They bought The Walking Dead. Skybound bought The Walking Dead, but didn't buy Telltale. So
they're
somebody
still employed,
has.
Aren't they?
Huh? No. They only took a few of them. Yeah. So last year, when Telltale Games got shut down, Skybound bought the rights to The Walking Dead license game, Telltale Walking Dead game. And then they hired on X number of employees, like 20 or 30, to come and help finish out the season. And then that was that. They finished it. It's done. It's out in the world. And then they do have the license, so they might continue to build that. But Telltale Games as a company, that game was no longer under the Telltale Games label. It was under the Skybound label. So now this group of people who are unrelated to anything in major gaming industry decided we're going to buy the name Telltale Games and revive the studio and bring it back because we think that there's still a place and room for adventure games. So they picked it up and it's two guys that started it. Their company called LCG Entertainment that acquired the license as well as the back catalog, which includes The Wolf Among Us, as well as I think it also includes, like, I forgot what other license it included. There was two particular ones. We're not sure about like the heavily licensed ones like Game of Thrones and, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff like that. But they went out there, they bought it, and they're bringing it back up again. The problem is, so they've done a couple of things. They moved to Malibu as the headquarters. That's 400 miles away from where it was before. And they put out an offer out there to hire back the employees of Telltale, which was 250 employees. However, because there's a scrappy new studio now, they can't afford to pay anybody full time. So they're allowing to hire them back as freelance exclusively for now until they can drum up the ability to then build a new studio. So their goal is to have like 30 employees by the end of next year or something like that, 30 or 40 employees working on new adventure games in the Telltale series. But they're focusing heavily on their technology and just building the studio out again. One key person they did bring back in full time was the former director of operations at Telltale Games, who her job at that point was to work with like licensing and stuff like that with Telltale. Now she's going to be basically, her job is to rebuild the internals of the company and make it happen. So like from everything from like hiring new people, you know, getting the game started, working with different hires to bring them all in, buying the toilet paper, you know, like all the things to like build out the inner workings, the operations of the studio.
Right.
So they got it back. And then some people are super excited and have signed on the freelance basis because they were working freelance anyway. So it's like it was the right time, good right time, right place. But others are kind of like upset. Some are kind of like, this is weird. I don't know what to think about this, especially the way that it got shuttered. So it's an interesting thing. Like I'm excited, I think, but the background that these two have is interesting. So it's the two guys that founded it, James Ottilie and Brian Waddle. And Ottilie has spent most of his career in mobile games. So he has a background. He was founder and CEO of Galaxy Pest Control, best known for licensed games based on Duck Dynasty and Power Rangers. Nothing super exciting there. Waddle's experience includes running sales and marketing for the Havoc games engine, which is a pretty cool thing. Like that's a big deal. But neither worked at Telltale prior to that. Wolf Among Us and Batman, those are the ones that they got the licensed properties back to. So
very
those
nice.
Could come out.
Very nice.
And then they're looking at getting some of the others. The only one they won't get is The Walking Dead because that's now owned by Skybound. But it's interesting. Like I didn't expect this to happen. Somebody to just like pick it up and be like, oh, let's bring it all back. Like this whole story has just been, somebody should make a documentary about all this.
I mean, it's really weird. I'm sure this happened before, but not to my knowledge. And I mean, it's great, but yeah, like they have to go super slow, come back from normal. Like they have the same clout, or they're going to go into the industry with the same clout they had prior to it being disbanded. But
yeah,
you know, how do you recover? Like, yeah, a lot of things have to change, but how do you keep it? I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's weird. It's I really don't know what to think of it.
It's going to be tough because, like, the name before the dissolving of the company had a really good name behind it. But now it's, like, kind of toxic a little bit. But if they can turn it around and build, like, the first thing they need to do is work heavily on the tech and build a new engine and new system. And this guy with his Havoc experience, maybe he can do something with that, you know, and, like, right. pull his resources to make that stuff happen. But they need to make sure that's in good shape. And I think like The Wolf Among Us would be a great starting point for them because that was such a good Telltale game.
It's been so long now. Like you might as well jump into it now.
I heard stories the other day that Gearbox would love to see more Tales from the Borderlands. Oh. So I'm curious to know if with this happening, maybe they'll sign them on to do more of that. So I think that would be pretty interesting. I mean, not pretty interesting, like extremely interesting.
Yeah, that would be awesome, man.
So, yeah, it's pretty wild. Like, there's a lot happening here. But, yeah, so Telltale's back, and we'll see where things go in the next couple of years with that studio. All right.
All right.
Polygon has put out an article.
Oh, boy.
About an Polygon. Amazon listing that was leaked.
Oh, Polygon.
Where we may have, now this is just speculation, but there may be Overwatch coming to the Switch. Now I have a question for you, Austin.
Yeah.
Would you want to play Overwatch on the Switch?
Absolutely not.
That was my first thought.
Absolutely not. But I guarantee you, if people play Fortnite on the Switch, they'll play Overwatch on the Switch.
That's true. I forgot about that being on the Switch.
I'm not going to lie. This case that's been leaked looks pretty awesome.
It does, yeah. So there was a case that Accessory Maker Power A, it came out on Amazon briefly. It was leaked on there, and it was labeled officially licensed by Nintendo and Blizzard Entertainment. And it's a black case, yellow border around it with the Overwatch logo on the front. You open up the inside, and the little like flap in the bottom corner has the Overwatch logo on the interior as well. It's super nice looking. I mean, I would buy it. I mean, I think it looks super, super cool. But I just don't know if I want to play Overwatch on the Switch. It just seems odd. And then there was a time back in the Kaplan, for example, has said several times that they said that they would like to port it. You know, back in 2017, they said they love to port it to the Switch, but they said that it's super hard. It's quote challenging to do. I just don't know if they've been able to pull it off, but it sounds like it might be happening. I mean, maybe now they've been able to figure out how to convert their tech and engine to perform on it. So, and BlizzCon's around the corner. So maybe in November we'll find out that, surprise, Overwatch is on the Switch. Get it now.
At this point, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I have nothing really to say about that. If it's cool, it's great for people who will be able to play it, I guess. Yeah. I won't be getting it.
All right. Well, let's move on to our next story. Last story. This one I'm really, really excited about just because I feel like it's long overdue. But according to VentureBeat, game industry's first mental health event is going to debut in October. So we've talked a lot about this on the podcast in regards to, you know, violent or video games being blamed for a lot of things that have been happening in society, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But the core of it, I think, comes down to mental health. And this is an event that is showcasing that there are people out there that are actively putting forth a way, like, you know, taking the right steps forward to showcase that this is an issue that we can figure out a problem for if we get all these minds together and figure it out. And so they've identified it and they're going to do something about it. And I'm excited about that. So the International Gaming Summit on Mental Health is going to be October 9th through 10th. And October 10th is World Mental Health Day. So it's right around that time. And it's going to, the goal of it is essentially to focus in on, not only working on people's mental health struggles at game companies, but also find ways to help it for the community of gamers as well, and have different panels and speakers and things, but ultimately the idea is let's bring people together, whether they're in the games industry or if they're in the mental health industry, bring them together into a room and let's talk about stuff and see if we can like solve problems and get things figured out. So it's being put on by Mark Chandler, who's a game industry veteran who worked at Epic Games and also previously organized a GamesCon event in Toronto.
Son of
a gun. I know.
Get out of here, Epic Games. No, yeah. That's fine.
But yeah, so he himself 2 years ago struggled with his own mental health and said he was saved by his mother and got proper medical help. And then about 2 years ago, he started talking about it publicly on Facebook and elsewhere as part of the healing process. And it, he said it was through that sharing in the industry that people started reaching back to him or reaching out to me and telling their stories. And that was how this all came about. And then he also played Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice, Sacrifice, which inspired him as well. And so he was he said that he consulted with so Ninja Theory received a grant from healthcare firm Wellcome Trust and it consulted with Paul Fletcher, professor at Cambridge University, who is a leading expert on psychosis. And then he became an advisor to the studio. So Chandler, the starter of this group, reached out to Fletcher and said, hey, I'd like you to be on the advisory board for this committee. And then he also got this lady named Eve Crevochet, the executive director of gaming mental health nonprofit Take This, Kate Edwards, the executive director of the Global Game Jam, and Mike Wilson, a founding partner at Devolver Digital. So people that are both involved in games and then mental health and all these different things coming together for this conference in October to hopefully pave the way.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
It's something we needed for a very, very long time. And I'm happy to see that this is actually coming about because it's funny how more games have been coming out for the mentally ill, whether it's, you know, for science purposes to gather data on certain individuals or just to kind of speak out about it. So yeah. This is great. I'm curious to see what comes to the table, you know?
I know.
What comes out of it. Like, I hope this is something that keeps going forward and maybe we'll see more games about
I agree.
Mentally ill individuals. I mean, it's a real thing. I think we're all a little mentally ill in some form or fashion. You know, something just touches your mind in the wrong or right way to make you, you know, I don't know. Everyone's a little crazy, I feel like. That's what I'm trying to say.
We all got a little bit of craziness.
And
the modern day, you know, nuances of social media and things and constant signals and stuff that come at us every 5 seconds don't ever help either. So it's a lot to take in. It's a lot to process. And I feel like our brains have not yet evolved to be able. That's one thing I feel like is a big issue is that our brains have yet to evolve to the changing society. So our brains are still wired and built to respond to the number of signals that we were used to 30 or 40 years ago. Mm. And they're just now slowly getting to the point where they can now hopefully process more information, but it's going to take a while to get that all figured out.
Yeah.
So,
it's like The Giver. Remember the book, The Giver?
Yep.
The old man was trying to give this girl information about the past and stuff, but he gave too much too quick to, was it his son or his daughter?
I can't remember.
He had a child and he did it wrong and that person went crazy and ended up either committing suicide or went to go die. I don't forget what happened. So somehow his child had died because of what he had done. So
yeah,
it's kind of like that in a way. You're right. We're getting so much information so quickly that can't process at all. We don't know how it affects us mentally over time and how that consistent just being bombarded. Like,
yeah,
I mean, that's crazy. It's crazy just thinking about it.
You don't know what to do with it. It's a lot of information.
I'm going crazy, Brett.
Yeah. And I've started noticing too, like after my accident, there are moments where if I'm like tired or if I've just like had a really long day and was like super busy, if I have a lot of things going on around me, like I say I come home from work after a super long day, I'm tired that day or whatever. And I'm like, sometimes what I used to do is I would sit there and like listen to a podcast and cook dinner and then maybe do another thing. I struggle to do that now. Like I have to shut something off in order for me to focus on a thing without, and same with like driving. Like I can't listen to too many. Like, if I have like five people in the car as I'm driving, like, it's harder for me to pay attention to any one thing, which obviously when I'm driving, I need to be driving.
Right.
So I just like tend to tune out whatever else is there. As much as possible.
Well, I think it's with old age, because I get like that sometimes too.
Okay. Well, okay.
But I mean, well, I hope so. Yeah. It doesn't help that you got a brain injury.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting. But anyway, so that's going to wrap it up for our new segment this week. So if you want to watch these in video format, you can check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/innergamer. Make sure you like, subscribe, all that stuff. Bang that bell so you get notifications as the videos drop. And stay tuned. We'll be right back for a discussion topic all about World of Warcraft Classic, how it came to be, why people want it, and why this is a big, huge thing for gamers. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. Each week, we break down a hot topic in the gaming industry. And this week, we're going to talk about something that I can't believe I'm saying this. We need to talk about WoW Classic.
Well, you haven't been able to talk about anything else this week, so.
No. So, World of Warcraft Classic is here, and it is a game in which they have taken WoW back to the days of 2004, vanilla WoW, back when you grinded the shit out of everything.
Technically, it's not 2004.
2005, 2006, one of those.
One of the patches near the launch of Wrath of the Lich King.
Yeah.
So, I think it's like 1.3. Or something like that.
But it doesn't include those expansions, right?
It does not include those expansions.
But it's just like, you mean like at that state where they fix shit?
Crusade.
Like where they fix stuff and all that?
Yeah, so a lot of it's been fixed. Yeah. And so it's like a few years after launch.
Gotcha.
Anyway, so, go ahead.
Yeah, so we went back to that. So we're going to talk about how this came to be, why people want it, and why this is really huge for gamers. But first, I want to just give a little bit of overview on the stats. What's this BOA mean, by the way?
That is Battle of Azeroth. So that's the latest expansion.
Okay, perfect. So Battle of Azeroth on Twitch has over 500,000 viewers.
Mm-hmm.
But Twitch WoW Classic on launch day, if I believe, mm-hmm. not mistaken,
it's all launch day,
had 1.1 million viewers on Twitch, which is like bigger. It's like, I mean, it's bigger than Fortnite.
So let me clarify. So the Battle of Azeroth had over 500,000, I think, on average.
Right, right.
And then on launch, WoW Classic had over 1.1 million.
Correct. Yes.
Viewers. So.
Yes.
There you go.
Which is a lot.
Yes.
It's insane. And people were waiting in line to queue up into these servers because that's just WoW Classic. That's how WoW was. You just waited to connect. And people were waiting an hour long line. Like last week I streamed.
It was an hour. It was hours.
Oh, that's not. Yeah. It was hours.
Sorry. I thought you said hour.
I said hour, and then I kind of said hours, and then I was like, because some people were waiting like an hour at the beginning,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
then it got bigger and bigger to where it became hours, and then hours upon hours. I heard somebody say like 9 hours was the waiting time that they had in one server. I streamed with Louise last week on a Borderlands 2, and about 45 minutes into our stream, he was like, hang on a second. And then my game got super laggy because he was hosting the server. I was like, why is it getting so laggy? He's like, oh yeah, I'm pulling up WoW Classic to queue up real quick. And then so he's queuing up in WoW Classic, and then he jumps back in the game, and we proceed to play 2.5 more hours. And then finally, by the time we're done, he's like, oh, I got about 5 minutes left in my queue. I was like, are you shitting me? 2.5 fucking hours to queue up to this game. And then like people, there's so many people, there's all these quests that people have to do. They're waiting in line for quests, which we'll talk about later. But this is insane. It's been nuts. Like that's why Control didn't get any like acknowledgement last week, because WoW Classic fucking came out. And then now we have a Discord channel dedicated to WoW Classic, a text chat. And everybody in Discord is playing WoW Classic. Okay, anyway, Austin, tell me your thoughts about WoW Classic. Yes. Why is this happening?
Before I get into it, To experience my first 30 minutes of logging in at launch, make sure to go over to youtube.com/theinnergamer and catch the video where I go absolutely insane and basically rage quit from WoW Classic because it was absolute chaos, as the title says. So check that out after you listen to this. So luckily, early on, like the day of, I didn't even know it was releasing that day on Monday because I looked online like a week or two before and it said, oh, it's going to come out the 27th. It was wrong. The 27th is like, I don't even know. It was coming out. It was launching both days, the 26th and the 27th. And I forgot the stipulations of that. So I was like, oh, dang, like, what do I got to do? Luckily, I watched a video and it's like, hey, make sure you load up WoW Classic ahead of launch. So you'll be in the server before everyone else jumps in and you won't get stuck in a queue. Because, yeah, 10,000 or more people were waiting in line just to play this game. Anyway, so I did that. I told Travis. He barely got in on time, and I think he was in the queue for like 5 or 10 minutes, and he got right in.
Yeah.
He was lucky. So it was 5 o'clock, jump in, and I mean, what did you expect? Millions of people are logging on at the same time on all these servers, and the servers can't keep up with it. There's people stacking on people. I couldn't even leave my spawn point right when I got on the server for about 30 seconds, which was concerning. I could move around. I just couldn't get out of it. Like, everyone was spawning on each other. That's how bad it was. So,
were you, like, skipping as you were moving and stuff like that?
I wasn't skipping, but everyone else was skipping.
Wow.
And at first, there was, like, maybe 100 people in the area. And then as I, like, walked away from the lag area, which is where everyone was spawning, I was a Orc Warlock, so I'm in Durtar in the Valley of Trials. Yeah. So I walked away, I turned around to the spawn point, and more people started, you know, just coming into view. Like, they were just spawning in all around me. There was a good, like, 300 people, it seemed like, all in this one area. And then I came to the realization, oh, fuck, I got a quest. So it took about 10 to 20 seconds to actually accept a quest, and then trying to kill all the mobs for the quest was near impossible. And Nick, one of our Discord buddies, he was like, yeah, just join a group and you can, you know, you'll get done faster. So the first mission was to kill boars. So I was like, oh, easy. Yeah. So I obviously everyone's spawning camping these boars and killing them all before I have a chance. So within about 15 minutes on a quest that should take you about 5 minutes, I got all the boars, so I turned that in. Then I went to my second quest where I had to kill vile familiars, which are like little imp demon things. Shoot fireballs at you. And I was like, I cannot complete this quest. There were way too many people here. And I just like, I just got so pissed off because like, I'm wasting my, what? I'm playing this game and I can't do anything? I'm wasting my time. I'm going to be here for 2 hours trying to complete quests in this area where there's literally hundreds of people at.
I have a question. You've played WoW before.
Yes.
You've probably experienced moments where you've wasted your time before. What were you thinking? Why?
I was having fun, okay, Brett. You don't understand. You're not a WoW man.
So what is? Okay,
well,
so
let me. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I got off. Me and Travis both got off, and I decided to get back on later, just to see if I could get back on. And I was stuck in a queue of like 10,000, and I did not. I think I got back on around 10:30, or like it let me go into the world. But I wasn't there on my computer, so I was AFK long enough for it to just boot me back out. And I was like, all right, I'm not even going to play tonight. So the next day, in the morning time, I jumped on, and there was less people there, but still a lot of people. And I was able to complete a bunch of quests. And with that, I realized that I should group up with people. Now, this may seem like a no-brainer for people who play WoW, but for me, when I jumped into WoW early on, and even up to this point, I never really grouped up with anybody unless it was for a dungeon or with friends that I actually know. Like, that's just never been a thing that I did. You know, I've never made friends on WoW. I probably made a few over the years, but nothing significant. But
right.
With this new, like, this coming in or coming into this version, it was a necessity. And I know a lot of people were talking about how they miss the social aspect of WoW. And I really didn't understand that. It's like, okay, like, yeah, you can talk to people, like, you're forced to talk to people, okay, whatever.
But how are you, so it's all text chat, right?
Yeah.
How do you, when you group up, like, do you literally, like, is there a component in the game where you can add a group and form a group, and then now you're, like, grouped together,
yeah,
like,
so you
in
can,
the game?
You can scroll over someone's character and then right-click on their icon, say invite.
Okay.
So it creates a group, and then you have group chat. It's a different color from general chat or just people speaking.
Got it.
In the area. So it's like you if you wanted to complete these missions, you had to group up with people. So I actually made a friend. Like, me and this guy on the second day of WoW, I like we quested for 3 hours. And I was like, hey, man, you're really cool. Like, we should quest again soon. He's like, yeah, sure. Because I had to get off and get lunch. And I was like, man, that was actually a lot of fun. Like, he was really chill. I think it was a he. You know, I was really chill. We're doing the same things. We just helped each other out. And I was like, man, this is awesome. So after that, I was like, so this is what everyone's talking about. Like, I did not get it.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. So up and well, still, even now, like, some of the bigger... So we've gotten to the point where the herd is kind of fanned out enough where you can kind of quest on your own if you need to. But there is still a certain... I don't want to call them boss, but like single mob or single beings in the world that you have to kill for quests that they only spawn. There's only one of them and they spawn in every so often. So you'll go to these guys and there'll be like a bunch of people waiting for them. And so everyone's like, can I get an invite? Can I get an invite? Like, I don't like if I don't I'm not in a group, I'm not getting this kill. So like people will just stack up over this one person that they need to kill. And once they spawn in, like, everyone attacks them. So there was one guy called Zalazane, which is in the second area of being an orc.
Yeah.
And I was there for, like, 15 to 20 minutes. And my group could not kill this guy. Everyone kept getting him before us. So.
Wait. So when you're in a group, does if anybody in your group kills a person, does that count for the whole group?
Yes.
As a number? Okay.
Yes.
So being in a group makes sense because then that distributes, you have larger chances of killing somebody because somebody could be over here killing a board that spawns by them. Okay. Yeah.
So
that makes sense.
Clarify more for you is like if you attack a mob in the world, it becomes your group's loot. So if someone else
gets assigned to you at that point, kind of? Or?
Like, yeah, because it'll be like, it'll have a red icon over under its name, like a red color. That means it's available. And then when you attack it and it stays that, you see it's health and it'll go down, right? And so it's like, oh, okay, like now he's dead and he's my loot. But if someone else takes it, it becomes gray. So it's not yours anymore. It's theirs.
We're like, so if you're killing a boar, somebody else could jump in there that's not in your group and attack that boar and finish it off and then take the loot that you were working towards?
As soon as you attack that,
it's assigned to you, right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So that was the issue. And that's been an issue all the way up until now. So obviously as more and more people spread out into the world, it's going to become less and less of a problem. But that whole like beginning, that whole social aspect was just so interesting and I've never experienced before. And it was awesome.
Yeah.
Like that is something that you can't experience. Well, you can, but it's very unique to this. And it was cool to see that dynamic really be pushed to the forefront. The only way to do it.
In other MMOs, like how do they, because I mean, I feel like, wow, I don't ever see this kind of experience where like you're connected to a server and if everybody spawned in that home base, all 3,000 of those people are in that one little space, right? It's not instance in a way where they only allow up to 100 people to appear. So like you could be there, but in order to like, you know, split out the load, there's only like a set number. Like in this case, it's, if there's 500 people at that spot in this server, there's 500 people on the screen, right?
So with new technology, they actually introduced layering. So there are more people in that area than you can see.
And is that in WoW Classic?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's new.
Okay.
And that was an issue early on because people were cheating the system by going to certain areas where people would camp and another group would spawn back into your lair and it would bring in a loot chest from a certain boss. And then you could loot it again.
Oh, interesting.
So I thought they weren't going to have this, but apparently they do. So you're having quite a bit more people in the same server than you would originally, than what would have been originally in the original Vanilla WoW.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of people in the area.
Wow.
Yeah. You just can't see them all.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I want to go through a few of these stats real quick that we have from some articles and stuff. So we talked about how first night, 1.1 million viewers in the first night of Twitch. That was the top games on Twitch were WoW Classic, GTA 5, and Minecraft, which is interesting. They're all like older games that were like taking the top. It's interesting how, because I saw you sent me a video clip of like 2 or 3 years ago where somebody asked a question about Vanilla WoW or something like that.
Well, let me preface with that.
Okay.
So, yes, that happened. But before that, people were actually brought back private servers, which you're not allowed to do.
Right. Yeah, I was going to get into that. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, let's go ahead and talk about it now because I think that makes sense. So there was, because I have a friend of mine that I used to work with that he played, he was big in a WoW for a long time. And then he stopped playing it for a while. Like he said, he spent 79 days is the amount of time that he had invested into the WoW. So he's not playing WoW Classic for that reason because he's got kids now and stuff like that. He's like,
yeah,
I can't dedicate time to that. But he was saying that, yeah, they had the private servers that were around and there was a couple of them that were set up, but they were not legal. Basically, but people would play it to go back to the original days of WoW before they added all the quality of life things and all the new features and then making it easier to level and all that stuff. And I was reading that there was this guy that we'll talk about later, Joker TV, is a guy who has like speed ran to level 60 in all of these private server renditions of this game to get to level 60 in WoW. And he's like known for this kind of thing. And he became the first person to hit level 60 in WoW Classic in like 3 days.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Which is the record. Because it used to be 4.5 days or something like that. It was three days and some change. So,
yeah.
I mean, he freaking killed it.
Yeah. So, to your point about the layering and stuff like that, they said that. So, this is an event. The world first race to 60 is an event coordinated by Method, the most famous Warcraft guild, apparently. And they live stream Warcraft events, et cetera, et cetera. And so this guy, Joker, played a gnome mage, and then he did old-fashioned grinding to gain experience points. So he spent a lot of time in the Western Plaguelands, which might be familiar to you. I don't know anything about the Plaguelands, but that's where he spent all his time in. And he uses mage frost abilities to draw large groups of undead, freezing them in place while he pelted them with ice. And he just grinded the shit out of that for a very, very long period of time. And then whenever he finished it, 347,000 people were watching him on Twitch when he reached he was about to reach it. And he abandoned the undead fields and then went to a nearby settlement and attacked a Scarlet Paladin who, upon dying, gave him the few hundred XP he needed. When he won, he went back to Stormwind City where a mass of players were there and quickly swarmed him to congratulate him in the game on his win. And then he played Celebration by Cool and the Gang on his stream, which I thought was pretty clever. But in this, he used layering to constantly switch to new instances of the area he was farming for experience, helping him skip the long wait between monster respawns, which it sounds
smart.
Like people don't agree
smart.
With. But yeah.
Yeah, people don't agree with it. And yeah, I heard some concerns that people were like, yeah, this guy did it, but who's to know that he wasn't switching out people over time or, you know. They're kind of saying that, you know, some people kind of have to. Well, I know. I take that back. They're predicting that people who, because this is a giant race to 60, basically.
Right, right.
And I didn't go in that with that mentality. My mentality was I need to get ahead of the pack so I don't get stuck with everybody else.
Right.
Trying to grind stuff. But obviously people are trying to get to 60 as quickly as possible. So people were thinking that, are we going to go with, like, the guy who gets 60 first, is he going to stream for the complete time, you know, like stay up for 3 or 4 days just to get this achievement?
Yeah.
Are we going to go with this? There's a guy who's going to get to this level 60, and did he switch out people who know what they're doing so they can take shifts to get to level 60?
Yeah.
So I don't know what this guy did. I didn't keep up with it, but you know, it's cool.
Sounds like he 60. Did it all, but yeah. Himself. But yeah, I mean, you don't really know. But it, I mean, I don't know if he. It wasn't clear if he streamed everything, the entirety of it.
Right.
But it was 79 hours of... No, it was 79 hours of nonstop grinding, they said.
Oh, wow.
So that's almost continuous grinding, killing, and questing.
Yeah.
He surpassed it. Yeah, so that's pretty wild. But and I also found it... like it's crazy to me, like... The WoW community is interesting because, I mean, we've heard the stories of how, you know, people get married in WoW and people have funerals in WoW and all this different stuff. And in this thing, they had, like, there was so many people trying to turn in quests and, like, do these things that they're, like, literally waiting in line, in a single file line, to get their turn to carry out that next quest thing, which I just didn't think was even a thing that would exist in this game.
It's weird. Okay, so here's an interesting thing. So we interact with questing, right?
Yep.
And we go to this one spot where we have one of these single guys who we have to kill. We got a group of five because people kept coming up. So we're like, well, join our group so we can kill this guy and we can all be on our way at the same time. And so other people started coming. They're like, I need an invite. I need to be in this. Like, who has a group? Blah, blah, blah. I was like, all right. We got here first. Everybody line up. So there's 5, 6, 7, 8, maybe 9 people. And to my surprise, everybody lined up in front of me. And I was like, wait, I didn't really mean that, but that's kind of cool that everyone's like, all right, let's do this. Like, you know, and that goes like the community here compared to, I guess, back then, which I don't really remember too much. Everyone's so nice and everyone's so like, we're going to do this right. We're going to help each other out and we're going to, you know, we're going to get to the top together. You know, that kind of mentality is that's what it feels like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just like the dynamics here have changed a lot, I feel like. And anyway, that's a side note.
Yeah, no, it's it's so weird. So actually, apparently, according to this was patch 1.12, where the original World of Warcraft pre-expansion add-ons was at its strongest, having had a few bugs. So this was before Burning Crusade,
right.
But the last, like, most stable version that they brought out. I'm sure, like, more stuff added into it. But what I'm curious about is how... Why? Like, why are people back into this game? Why is it so big? And I definitely think nostalgia is one of the factors.
Yeah.
But I've heard a lot of stories about as WoW has developed over time, they brought out new expansions and new updates and things like that that have had added more and more regions and more levels and more ways to level up faster to, like, new points, that it kind of lost the essence of what people came to this game for, which is the grind. And
the grind and the social aspect of it.
Yeah.
Because the biggest thing was when me and Travis used to play, like, we would get stuck at level 30. We call it the 30 curse. Like, we would just stop playing because it got so hard to get past 30 to get to 40, which when you would get your mount and you had to get money, save up money so you can get your mount because it's a lot, you know, and the currency back then. And... Nowadays
you just pay $4.99 to get them out.
So in current WoW, so a Battle of Azeroth, you can get to level 60 in like 2 days if you want to. Like, and you don't even need, you don't have to be with anybody. You can get there like this, right? You don't have to keep, like, there's no chatting or anything. And back in the day, you had to ask people, hey, where is this quest location at? Or where do I find this thing at? And I forget what the quest was, but it was in the Barrens, and me and Travis were trying to find this dead body, and we could not find it. We went all over. Like, we probably spent a day or two trying to beat this quest while questing with other stuff, and this other guy was like, hey, follow me. I'll show you where it's at. And it's like, holy shit, we actually went to this area but couldn't find this body, and it was just, like, kind of hidden off just a little bit. So it's, like, one of those things where now, like, assuming you haven't played this or you forgot, like, talking with people and making those, again, the social aspect of it, of people helping people out, is, I think, what really attracts people to this, which is weird because a lot of people that are coming back have probably played WoW and they know exactly where everything's at, you know?
Yeah.
So, is that kind of
stuff? No, that makes sense. So it's all a social thing, really.
Yeah.
And that's, it's weird that nothing's been able to capture that.
So I kind of relate it to my job, right? I'm a firefighter, I'm a paramedic, I go through hard, grueling stuff, but what makes it worthwhile in the end is that I'm doing this stuff with other people, and we understand each other.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's hard. I think that's the best way I can explain it.
Yeah.
Like,
you're overcoming.
There's a connection with us dealing with.
You're overcoming objectives together and, like, achieving things.
Yeah. And they're hard.
Together.
We create stories, you know, we create connections. And I think that's what this brings here.
Yeah.
Is you're doing hard things, but then you get to have stories and make connections out of it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think everyone's, the way that they're going with games as a service is like, okay, what can we give them that keeps them hooked enough? So it's just easy enough, or probably too easy.
Well, yeah, that's the key thing, I believe, is that they've toned down the difficulties of everything to where it's not. Yeah, it's like, let's make it as just difficult enough to keep them, like, to where there is a challenge, but not enough to where they won't continue down a path of progression.
Right.
To eventually spend more money, probably, or do more of the or consume more of the content. In this case, it was like, but I'm curious to know, like what about, was it the, I mean, you know, earlier when we were talking control, you were asking me, like, what's the drive in the story? Like, why am I compelled to play through this story? Does that exist in WoW, or is it more the gameplay that you're attracted to and the grind with your friends? Like, does the story compel you in any regard as much as like what you were looking for with, like, say, Control? Or is it more that social aspect and that achievement of progression with your friends that is the appeal?
So originally it was the world that appealed to me. Obviously Warcraft had come out as the RTS and that was cool. And there was lore and characters and fantasy. And I loved all of that. So I was like, yeah, this just makes sense. And obviously seeing Travis play, I mean, first of its kind. So seeing it for the first time was like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. Yeah. This whole world I can travel in. So like that kind of really appealed to me. I really didn't keep up with the story too much. So leading up to WoW Classic's release, I looked up lore for, like, just basic lore for World of Warcraft, like what happened prior to the game. And I think that's kind of really sucked me into, like, oh, this is why this character's here, or this is why this is happening or had happened, and this is, like, tying things together. Mm-hmm. So, like, now I'm more into the lore and the stories kind of driving it here and there. But it's not, like, the biggest thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just something about – it's nostalgia, really, I guess. That's the only way – I mean, the grind is a waste of time, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that makes it so hard for me to get into it is just knowing that that grind exists, but it's so many people that fall in love with that grind.
Right.
Like, that is what they want. And, like, you know, people talk about, like, I play Destiny for the grind and stuff like that, but I don't think it nearly has the charm as, like, what WoW does to, like, keep you invested.
The best thing is Dark Souls.
Yeah.
There's a grind there.
Yeah.
There's something that people have to, that can relate to each other when they're like, hey, I beat this, or I beat this boss. It's like, yeah, I understand you completely. I understand the pain you went through. Everyone who did that and went through pain.
Well, I can imagine, like, with raids, especially in WoW. Like, when did they introduce raids? Was it before the, did they ever have vanilla WoW raids? They did, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, as far as I know, yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think Leroy Jenkins is before any of the expansions came out and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that stuff, like, I feel is one of those things where, like, you're working so hard and you're trying and trying and trying and you don't finish it, but you try again. And then you're like, yes, we've accomplished greatness. And you're, like, super excited and thrilled and all that stuff. And that's a pretty big deal. Yeah, man, it's an interesting
thing. It has blown up.
Thing.
Like, no other thing has blown up before.
And it's crazy. I mean, because this is a weird example. I mean, this should hopefully set a precedence for other companies to show that, you know, there's something missing in games today. Like, I was talking earlier about Control, and, like, this is a true single-player experience that, like, doesn't exist much anymore. And WoW Classic is, like, it's the early days of MMOs, back when they were, you know, They were more challenging. They were more involved. Like, you had to work hard to get what you were, like, striving for.
Right.
And I'm curious to see if
people quit college for this. People flunked out of college.
Good and bad.
Yeah. I know. Like, people quit their jobs. People quit, lost family and friends or whatever, you know, just for this game. And that should go to show you, like, there's something special about.
It's a good show. We need more of that.
Yeah, I know. In a time where we have no time at all.
Yeah.
Let's
yeah.
bring it back. But people love it, man. Like, it's just crazy. But on your statement you're going to make early on, how was it J. Allen Brack, the CEO of Blizzard, I believe. Yeah. He was, some guy came up to him, right? And was like, hey, are we going to have, like, servers that go back to something like Classic WoW? And he was like, no, we're not going to do that. Like, you think you want that, but you don't, because there's bugs from the past that are still going to be there if we brought them back. So he just kind of laughed it off and was like, all right, next question. But then a few years later, they announced World of Warcraft. I'm sure he was like, god dang it, why are we doing this? I can't believe we're doing this. And then the seats blow up so much, they have to be sitting there scratching their head like, I don't understand.
We don't understand our gamers anymore. Like, we thought they wanted Diablo on mobile, but they don't want that. But they want to play a game that came out 10 years ago. I don't get it.
And such success. Like, someone was estimating it was like 2 million people worldwide playing this. I don't know. I don't think the numbers add up, but there's a lot of people playing this game.
Well, and what I didn't realize is, so when I was trying to figure out how to get it set up, I did not realize that this still required an active subscription to WoW. I thought maybe they were just going to release it as, like, side content that was free.
Right.
But this is, like, I mean, super smart, because now they got a million people back in, and after a couple months when that trial's up, they're getting $15 a month from over a million people.
Yes.
That is a cash cow.
Yes.
And that's, like, I think way
and
better.
They've been struggling over the past year just to get anything, and they haven't been making content either.
Yeah.
And I've found that, like, this is all Activision. They're like, hey, we got to cut corners. We got to cook the not really cooking the books, but they got to make it seem like they're making money.
We got to cut 800 employees and then announce that we made a lot of money.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just like, holy fuck. If you guys just made content that was great, you'd make money.
Yeah.
So I think this goes to show, and I hope this is a huge takeaway for all developers, being like, okay, how are we going to be successful? It's not just about making money. It's about how are we going to be successful, because then money will follow.
Right. Well, and I mean, we've talked about this in the past, like trying to, like, what's a solution for microtransactions, like getting rid of those and then doing something else instead. And I think, I mean, as much as I still to this day say I refuse to pay a monthly subscription for a single base game. But I feel like this is, especially if they're keeping it updated and fixing it and making changes, I'd much rather them say, pay us $15 a month and we'll make sure you get consistent stuff, rather than nickel and diming you every step of the way.
Exactly.
You know, because I mean, they're always complaining about, well, there's a vocal minority there, or not a vocal minority, there's a minority of people that pay the microtransactions for a free-to-play game, like the Apex Legends guy said. We're trying with free-to-play, but the same time, we're not getting a lot, like there's very few people that actually pay for it. I'm like, well, I think this is the solution for that.
Pricing's
like,
everything.
Yeah. I mean, even like Apex, I feel like if they charge $5 a month, like,
well,
and
I don't
kept
agree
it
with
update,
that because.
Oh, like doing the monthly?
So with WoW originally, well, I guess still now, you have to pay $60 or whatever they have. Like originally for the base game for vanilla WoW back in the day was $60 or $50, I guess. And then you pay the monthly subscription. So, but you have a gigantic world with X amount of hours. It's going to be over 50. It's probably going to be over 100 hours.
Right.
Maybe 200-400 hours of gameplay there. Like, that is, I mean, if you want to put in time, factor in time, like, you're going to get a lot of content out of that just by itself.
Yeah.
You know, it's a full-fledged game with crap ton to do.
I mean, it's story content as opposed to you're going to get more skins and shit.
Yeah, I don't want to pay $5 for a free-to-play game
just
to go in and shoot people.
Yeah.
That just doesn't work that way.
That makes sense. Yeah.
At least in my mind. If you disagree, please let us know.
Right.
So, like, for free-to-play, it's like, okay, I don't mind there being microtransactions. Just don't be so egregious like the Iron Crown event was.
Yeah.
But that's just ridiculous. But everyone's trying to make games a business, but like if you look at Gearbox, they made very successful games with the Borderlands series. They went on a hiatus for X amount of years, and then they eventually brought it out again. And they knew, I don't see any reason why they didn't know it was going to be successful whenever they brought it out.
Yeah,
but they didn't bring it. They weren't cranking this stuff out every 2 years just to get money. They were cranking it out at the time they thought it was ready to go.
Yeah,
you know, they're in the business of making games, and I think we've lost that with some of these AAA titles.
Yeah, and they were smart too, because they opened their own publishing house where they could help finance the development of taking more time with Borderlands 3 by publishing other games for people, you know, which I think was a good move, because then they got to put man hours towards other things with other groups and pull in some money while they focus on getting this thing to be really good.
You know, I'm surprised EA, because with what was that one game? Solitude or something.
Sea of Solitude.
I'm surprised they're not doing more, like giving money to indie games.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't know how well that did, but, you know, what was the return on it?
Yeah.
They just helped a few hundred out. I don't know how much money that would be, but they might make some return.
I need to play that because it's on my Origin Access part of my pass. Nice. So I can play that for at no extra cost.
Yeah.
Which is cool. So I might pick that up. But yeah, I mean, I think this is a good move on their part to do it. I'm just surprised at how much it's taken people over, but I can kind of see where the interest lies, and like it's back to the basics. I mean, that's why I like playing these little indie games, because like playing Shakedown Hawaii was awesome. I mean, I beat that game. I spent 10 hours and I or 10 or 11 hours and I 100%ed it.
Nice.
And that's but it's because it was very simple and didn't have any fluff or crap or bullshit in it and stuff. And it's nice to see that today. And I'm anxious for Death Stranding for that reason. I think Death Stranding is going to be one of those strong single player focused kinds of games. And yeah, we'll see where else things come. But
yeah, so what I'm hoping for is actually Blizzard looks and like, okay, we should probably make a single player Diablo on PC. Diablo 4, like, yeah. real quick.
Well, yeah, I was at a party last night with a bunch of gamers and stuff like that, and it's just crazy to me how many times, how many times people have said PC gaming is dead. And last night I talked to people, I'm like, what do you guys play? And it's like, well, mostly I play PC, but then I also have an Xbox, or I also have a PS4, yeah. But mostly I play PC.
Right.
I'm like, yes, like, there's so many people out there that are, I mean, like, it's so big, and it's just like, come on, y'all, like, look at your audience.
They're trying.
Blizzard was made on the backs of PC players. Like, cater to that.
Right. I mean, just like J. Allen Brack was saying, you think you do, but you don't. Like, he's telling you what you want.
Right.
And I feel like a lot of these game companies are telling us what we want.
Yeah.
We want what we want. Don't tell us what we want. We're telling you what we
want. I'll tell you what I want.
Yeah.
I tell you.
We are your customers. Do you want to cater to us or not? If you do, we'll give you money. If you don't, we'll take our money elsewhere. And they just don't seem to get that.
Nope.
And that's been a very common in the last year with all the news that's been coming out. You know, like, oh, you know, single player's dead. Everyone wants games as a service, multiplayer, online all the time, blah, 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 blah. It's like, no. We're telling you right now.
So last question I have to kind of wrap this all up. Where do you think, like, my concern with WoW Classic is, where does it end? Because, you know, this is good now. It's bringing it back. It's making stuff happen. But I don't foresee them, you know, repeating the cycle again and being like, now here's WoW Classic Burning Crusade. And here's, you know, like, it's there's got to be, I mean, there's only so much you can do in WoW Classic before you're out of stuff to do. Is it gonna die off at that point? Like, is this just a short term three year thing? Or
yeah, that's the thing. Like, how some people are curious how long people will stay in WoW Classic. Like, because the main thing was Blizzard didn't want to upload a lot of servers because they don't know how many people are gonna fall off and how quick. So to have servers die and have to merge them is like a huge, not a good thing. Like, it's very, very, very bad. But I mean, to keep them there, there's no one playing in them, sucks too, because it's like there's no one to play with, right? And so whether or not this sticks around, I don't know. I'm really curious to see how far it sticks around, but it's very possible they're going to open the expansions up to this. They could rewrite everything they've done anew, because I know a lot of people had issues with some of the expansions, like this was good and that was bad. People, apparently Battle of Azeroth is completely crap, and they've lost a lot of subscribers because of how bad Battle of Azeroth is. From what I've listened, like, I don't really play it, you know. I didn't get it. I got the,
maybe they'll reimagine new expansions for WoW Classic.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah,
they're gonna take the best, because what's so great about it is they can take all the new technology now and make it better experience overall, yeah, keeping that same feel, which I think they've done very good, minus layering, which I guess for the amount of people that they have, you kind of have to do that. And yeah, it's very possible that they can just rewrite everything.
There we go.
I don't know what they're going to do going forward, but this might be something to do. I mean, dude, enough people stick around,
dude,
they might do
weird.
It.
Crazy.
I know.
All right. Well, that's going to conclude our discussion topic on WoW Classic. All of the above, with how it came to be, why you want it. I mean, it's a big deal. I mean, it's definitely the big craze right now. Like, I thought this was the year of auto battlers, and then that was kind of like in and out.
Yeah.
And then now it's like the year of like WoW Classic and shit. And it's just crazy.
So if you guys want to chat with us about WoW Classic and everything we talked about here, head on over to our Discord channel.
Literally, that's all they talk about.
That's all we're talking about right now. So
if you are on the WoW Classic bandwagon, join our Discord server, because you got a shit ton of people you can play with.
Yeah. I'm writing chat.
Like,
about
we've
all
had
of this.
Like 10 new people, I feel like, join just for the purpose of WoW Classic.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So it's all it's fresh.
We're starting a guild soon.
Oh gosh.
Not soon enough.
What did they say they were going to call it?
Something? No, something about sucking dick, and we aren't about sucking dick.
God. Oh, this is going to be awful. Yeah. But anyway, that's all happening. So stay tuned for that. Make sure you go to the show notes and click the Discord channel. If you have any questions or want to contribute to next week's segment or give us a topic of conversation, we'd love for you to visit theinnergamer.net and drop us a line. We're going to take a quick break and come back with our new free games for September and also upcoming video game releases, which I hope y'all are caught up with games. I'm not, but I hope you are, because it's the shitstorm is here. It's like from now to the end of the year, it's just game after game after game after game. So, or just play WoW Classic. All right, we'll be right back.
Does anyone want to take my spot? I need someone to play some games so I can play WoW Classic.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Looking forward to next week. Let's talk about our upcoming video game releases. But first, it's a new month, so that means September free games on console systems. On PS4, this month, if you're a PS Plus subscriber, you can get two games that are very exciting. You can get Batman Arkham Knight. You can also get Darksiders 3. So if you've been wanting to play those, go download them now. I might actually download Arkham Knight on here because I have it on PC, but I kind of want to just play it on PS4 because it's on the controller and all that stuff, so I might pick that up.
Very cool.
Or both of them, because why not? Add it to the library.
Great game.
And then on Xbox One, you can get a couple of games. You can get Hitman, the complete first season, and We Were Here, which are Xbox One games. And then Xbox 360 backwards compatibility, we have Earth Defense Force 2025 and Tekken Tag Tournament 2 coming out on Xbox. Then also, let's talk about new releases for next week.
Ooh,
we have way more than I thought there was going to be. Five things are coming out in the next roughly week here. First up, on the 4th, PS4, Switch, and PC, a game called Warsaw. Warsaw is a challenging World War II turn-based tactical RPG taking place in a war-torn city with beautiful hand-painted graphics. Lead a small, dedicated outfit of civilians and soldiers with their unique skills in their fight to take back the city besieged by occupying forces. This game kind of looks like Darkest Dungeon, with like the characters on the left and the characters on the right, and you like just progress on a linear pathway. And I just thought it looked really cool, and I might want to play it. It's on Switch, so why not?
Very nice.
On the 6th, we have two games coming out. First one is on Xbox One, Switch, and PC, Creature in the Well. This is from our local buddies at Flight School Studios. Creature in the Well is a top-down, pinball-inspired hack-and-slash dungeon crawler. As the last remaining BOTC unit, venture deep into a desert mountain to restore power to an ancient facility haunted by a desperate creature. Uncover and upgrade powerful gear in order to free the city of Mirage from a deadly sandstorm. Also on the 6th, PS4, Xbox One, and PC, we have the expansion Monster Hunter World Iceborne. This is a diverse locale rich with endemic life, numerous monsters that prey on each other and get into turf wars, a new hunting experience making use of the densely packed environment. In Monster Hunter World, this is the game that brought you a new style of hunting action. It's about to get even bigger with the massive Monster Hunter World Iceborne expansion. Note, you must complete the game before you can play the expansion, so keep that in mind. And then on the 10th, we have on Xbox One and PC, Gears 5 is finally here. From one of gaming's most acclaimed sagas, Gears is bigger than ever with 5 thrilling modes and the deepest campaign yet with all-out war descending. Kate Diaz breaks away to uncover her connection to the enemy and discovers the true danger to Sarah herself. And then also on the 10th, we have PS4, Xbox One, and PC, Greedfall. Greedfall is a game where you explore uncharted new lands as you set foot on a remote island, seeping with magic and filled with riches, lost secrets, and fantastic creatures. Forge the new world's destiny as you befriend or betray companions and entire factions. With diplomacy, deception, and force become part of a living, evolving world, influence its course, and shape your story. And that's going to wrap up our show for this week. Be sure and check us out next Tuesday for more from your favorite video game podcast. Visit theinnergamer.net for our latest episodes, videos, and social channels. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and tell a friend. And also, don't forget, this Saturday, we will be at Ampersand in Fort Worth, Texas, in West 7th area of Fort Worth, coming out for our Super Smash Brothers tournament and party. You can compete for $10. Sign up on our website at challenge.com, or just go to our Facebook event, click the link, and it'll take you to the sign up. $10 to compete. It's 64 player tournament. And then we'll also just have some free play system set up as well. So come on out, play with us, have some drinks, get some coffees, all that good stuff. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And if you want to support our show, you can donate on our website at theinnergamer.net. All donations go towards making the podcast, videos, and events even better. You can also join in on our conversation on our Discord channel. Check out the show notes for that link. Also, again, please don't forget to share our content. And it helps us out more than you know. It helps us grow, helps more faces get in front of, or get our content more in front of more faces. And we would really, really appreciate that. My name is Austin Morales.
My name is Brayden Oski.
And you've been listening to the Inner Gamer Podcast. We'll catch you guys next week.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
breaking the dance.
Yeah.
Breaking the dance.
Yeah. We'll be right back.